loved the world that he gave his only Son, so that everyone who believes in the Son shall not perish, but shall have eternal life. Indeed, God did not send the Son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved through the Son. God did not send the Son into the world to condemn the world. Condemn. In the original Greek, katerima. Condemn actually translates the word too strongly. It really means to separate or to judge, but not in a judicial sense, more of a judging whether a tomato is ripe kind of sense. The Son is here not to separate us, not even to judge us. The Son is here to love. Praying with this over the past month, one of the most iconic passages in the entire New Testament, I've been conscious that a pervasive judgment in our society is around mental health. From adults saying that they feel that they should be strong enough to handle life without their anxiety meds, to teens struggling to figure out their own brains, to elderly refusing to talk to their doctors about antidepressants because they've made it this far without them, to couples preferring to end their relationship rather than sit down with a trained neutral party who might shed some light on what's really going on. Even in an enlightened community such as this, some of the most pervasive judgment I hear is around mental health. It's wrapped up in shoulds, as in, I should be stronger, or I should be able to handle this on my own. No one says that about a broken leg. Deal with it on your own. Or to someone who needs heart medication, manage it yourself. When we have something physically wrong with us, we make behavioral changes, we utilize modern medicine, and we seek support. So too, it needs to be. Notice I didn't say should be. It needs to be with our mental health. Allow me to share this extended metaphor that I encountered by psychologist Karen Young. She writes, imagine this. You're traveling along a freeway when your brakes feel as though they might fail. They're working, but something feels off. This has never happened before. You drive the car to the closest mechanic, and after a thorough inspection of the car, you're told everything's fine and there's nothing to worry about. You get back on the freeway, and the same thing happens. Your brakes seem to be working, but they just don't feel right. You take the car back to the same mechanic, and again, you're told that everything's fine. There's nothing to worry about. You're told this with such certainty that you start to feel a bit silly. Maybe it's not the car or the brakes. Maybe it's you. You're feeling worse now, more confused and wondering if the problem actually is with you. So you get back on the freeway, and your brain keeps reminding you of what happened the last time and the time before, and you don't want the same thing to happen, but it does. You drive to the mechanic, and again, you're told that everything's fine and there's really nothing to worry about. You're encouraged to keep driving, which you do, but this time you avoid the freeway. You're ready to open your loving arms to any explanation that could possibly make sense of your moody breaks. It's not the car. Maybe it's the freeway. That could make sense, right? The easy solution is to avoid it. It would be ridiculous to keep doing the same thing in the same place when it all feels wrong, so that's what you do. Can you imagine how it would feel when everything inside of you is telling you that something is wrong, but the person or people that you trust most are telling you that there's nothing wrong? Telling you that there's nothing to worry about. Now, imagine if you heard this. Since you've been avoiding the freeway, the car has been fine. The more you do this, the more certain you are that something about the freeway causes your brakes to feel fragile. This works beautifully. No highway, no fear of brake failure, no worries. It's easy. Until one day, the freeway is unavoidable. You're on the freeway, and it happens again. It makes no sense at all, and it's terrifying. So this time, you find a different mechanic. She looks over the car and says, "Well, it's no wonder you feel as if the brakes were failing. This car is absolutely fine. It's fabulous, actually. But there's this little thing that happens when some cars are at a high speed that causes them to feel the way that yours does. It's no problem, though. It happens a lot with these cars." As it's being explained to you, it makes complete sense. Best of all, it's compelling proof that it's the car that's the problem and you're not losing your mind. The mechanic then explains how to stop the car feeling the way that it does. She tells you that this strategy may not work right away, that it can take a bit of practice, but at least you know what's causing the trouble and you can feel safe. Anxiety works in a similar way. When people are in the thick of anxiety, they'll be aware that something doesn't feel right, but they may not have the exact right words to explain what's happening to them. All they'll know is that they feel as though something bad might happen. This might come in many ways, including what ifs and avoidance and anger and tears and stomach problems, racing heart. Everything inside is telling them something isn't right. And so being told that there's nothing to worry about doesn't help. In fact, it makes things worse. Whether it's anxiety or depression or bipolar or simply needing a sounding board, whether it's yourself or someone you care about, seeking or encouraging professional help is always appropriate. And as in the metaphor, it may take a few tries to find the right therapist. I've often said that finding the right mental health professional is a lot like dating. There are going to be a lot of people who look great on paper, but once you meet with them, you will determine whether or not this is the right person for you. It's a little easier finding a doctor, but finding the one who understands you and your condition can take time and trial and error. Beyond seeking professional help, Dr. Young makes a number of suggestions. First, those of us who encounter people who we care about, who have anxiety or other mental health issues, believe them. Don't be too quick to explain it away. It's nothing, you're fine. One of the most supportive things that we can do as mental health allies, as people who are trying to live this third chapter of the Gospel of John and not condemn the world, but not judge the world, is to show the person who has the concern that we believe them. You see, all too often in situations of fragile mental health, when someone is told, "Don't worry, there's nothing to worry about," The perceived threat actually gets bigger, because now not only is there the concern, there's also that feeling of being alone, without an ally. So one, believe them. Second, encourage the hot cocoa breathing and figure eight breathing that I taught the kids during the children's sermon. Remember, hot cocoa, simply breathe in for three, hold and breathe out. With the figure eight breathing, adding that movement and that touch can help, again, to stimulate a movement away from what is stirring in our minds. Jung also encourages what she calls grounding. Because so much of our mental dis-ease is rooted in what if or if only, she suggests this technique for helping to stay in the present. She tells us to ask the person who we are with who is anxious to name five things that they can see, four things that they can hear, three things that they can touch, two they can smell, one they can taste. She says you can mix that up, but it's usually a lot easier to find things that you can see than that you can taste. Friends, we read that God so loved the world that Jesus was sent not to condemn the world, but to save it. One of the great condemnations of our age, one of the great social and personal judgments of our age, is the stigma around mental health. My prayer after this sermon is that we will all practice a little more empathy, a lot more grace, with those who are struggling. Friends, the struggle is real. And with the saving power of God and the loving support of God's people here on earth, we can be co-agents of that saving grace, that redeeming love. May it be so.